Hello and welcome to The Corridor here on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario, and podcasting on Spotify and Apple Music. I'm Dinah Jansen, and with me is CFRC Local Journalism Initiative news producer Jesse Bell. This regional news program features news from Kingston and area provided by local and regional journalists through the support of the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Welcome and enjoy. And welcome to The Corridor. I'm Dinah Jansen, and today I'm joined by CFRC's Local Journalism Initiative producer, Jesse Bell. Our first story is from the CFRC Local Journalism Initiative reporter, Christina Laurie, covering the opening of the new recreation hub on Princess Street.
Kingston is carving out a new place on Canada's clean tech map. The Reaction Hub officially opened its doors last week at 945 Princess Street. It's a first-of-its-kind center for green chemistry innovation. Developed in partnership with the City of Kingston and Modern Niagara, with a $3 million investment from the city to drive sustainable technology and economic growth. The hub brings together lab, pilot, and manufacturing spaces under one roof to help chemistry-based innovations make the leap from research to real-world production. I spoke with Morgan Lettinen, Executive Director of the Reaction Hub, about what this means for Kingston and how the city's long chemistry legacy is continuing to evolve and lead the charge. Well, to start us off, I was wondering if you'd like to just introduce yourself for our listeners.
Sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Morgan Lettinen, and I am the Executive Director of Reaction Hub, but prior to that was a BSc 2016 and PhD 2022 graduate from Queen's in the chemistry department, and absolutely loved my over a decade at the university, and I'm excited now to be running an organization here in Kingston that supports the scale-up and commercialization of sustainable chemistry-based technologies.
Awesome. And for those hearing about it for the first time, what is the Reaction Hub? What's happening here in Kingston?
Yeah, so Reaction Hub is said an enabler of the commercialization of chemistry technologies. So this organization came to be a couple years ago when the ecosystem of chemistry within the Kingston region came together. We have, you know, great researchers at Queen's, but also service providers or these kind of technical experts with Kingston Process Metallurgy and a few others. It all came together and said, we have this really long chemistry history in Kingston with DuPont setting up its global scale-up facility here in the 40s. And what else can we do to amplify that ability and really fill a gap within the commercialization of chemistry technologies? Because the challenges that we have to solve, from climate change to ensuring, you know, economic resilience, are all can be solved with new sustainable chemistry technologies. So myself and a business partner both were former chemistry entrepreneurs, and we joined forces with this group in the city of Kingston and some other partners to try and solve that challenge. So Reaction Hub, as I said, has a couple different ways that we support these scaling chemistry technologies and companies. One with a facility at sort of the center of town. It's in a building that's a little bit over 200,000 square feet. We have purpose-built lab, piloting, and scale-up facilities. So you can bring a technology all the way from, you know, that past lab scale where it's been validated at a university, you now need to know what's next, all the way up to commercial scale. And then we do that in partnership and in with support from strategic services. So how do you, the who, what, where, and how much does it cost to get a technology to market? And then really helping these technologies understand how do they make the biggest impact.
Mm-hmm. And you dove right into this, but I was wondering if we could rewind a bit. Could you kind of describe what the valley of death is when we're talking about that jump from research to commercialization?
Yes, this is a the scary valley of death. So this really detrimental phase in the development of a chemical technology where getting outside of, you know, when you validate it, as we said, at the lab, and you go, okay, we've got something great here. We've invented something. It's got potential. There's a couple reasons why these types of technologies often die and they never actually make it to market. One, it's extremely expensive. So the equipment and the instruments and the facilities that you need change at every scale. And to get from that lab to, you know, something that's at hundreds of milliliters to hundreds of thousands of liters to millions of liters, the equipment that you need along the way is drastically different. So there's a cost component. There's also a time when you're inventing a new technology. That can take, you know, multiple PhD, you know, to take a professor's entire career potentially. And then there's also the next phase of getting it to market, which could take another 5 to 10 years. So the time is a challenge. And then the expertise. So at every stage, from the scientist to the engineer, but also the legal advice, the IP advice, the business knowledge, the finance knowledge, the how do you get investors? So all of these different pieces have to come together, and they're different at every phase. So this is where there's this valley of death that happens, where these technologies, no matter how much potential they have, sometimes just don't make it over the edge.
And how's the Reaction Hub kind of stepping in here and bridging that gap?
Yeah, so that was, it was truly, we said, how do we fill this, and how do we try and make the process of getting that technology through commercialization either more time effective, more cost effective, and, you know, try and take away some headaches along the way, because it's not easy. So one, with our infrastructure and the facilities that I mentioned, the way that we've designed the space is that it's in a flexible model. So think about it like co-working for science or co-working for chemical processes, where the equivalent at this time, normally a company has to go find a warehouse and spend hundreds of thousands to millions of dollars to make the electrical and the water and the gas and everything that you need to do a chemical process. They have to do that themselves. Or build a whole brand new building that can cost millions and millions of dollars. So instead, you can come to us and access the space for a flexible amount of time. And then that allows you, when you complete, you know, your goal, you get to the next stage, we can now rejig and mill you a new amount of space. So instead of spending hundreds of thousands of millions of dollars to build something that will then in 2 years need to change, you can be flexible with that. So on the infrastructure, that's that piece. We also have one of the big exciting things that was announced and really put out into the ecosystem this past week was the city of Kingston invested $3 million for capital expenses. So to have the equipment and the instruments in the building that these companies can need will need. And we offer it on a pay-per-use test, so a more accessible way for companies to access the equipment that they normally would not be able to buy themselves. So infrastructure, equipment, and then on the expertise and talent, we represent an ecosystem. We have over 100, we call them project delivery partners, so partners and organizations that we trust that we help pull the pieces together so that you get the right help at the right time.
And I'm not really in this world, so I'm kind of curious, is this like a first of its kind of project? Did you take inspiration from other things that were happening?
Yeah, so the really unique thing is the building and the facility that we're in, that we, with our main partner, Modern Niagara, who's the owner of the building, which is Canada's largest HVAC and mechanical contracting company. This building has a ton of Kingston history. It was been around since the 1940s, always with a chemistry, innovation, and manufacturing kind of lens to it. But the different spaces that we have, so the labs, piloting and scale-up facilities, all the way to areas that are zoned a factory where you can actually sell a product, having all of those in one spot in close proximity offered in this types of flexible way makes it the first of its kind in the world at the moment, which is really exciting. There are other facilities coming online in the next, you know, few years, which we are super happy about, because we want to, we focus on chemistry, but getting a facility that does something similar in biology would also be amazing. So being able to work collaboratively across the country to really improve not only Kingston, but Ontario and Canada's strength in you know, climate change and economic resilience.
Mm-hmm. And you definitely spoke to this at the beginning, but why Kingston specifically?
Yes. So really the why Kingston is this ecosystem that's present here. Having organizations that have been building over 25 years. So if we go even back further, we said DuPont started up here in the 1940s. There were other organizations that sort of came in through the generations. And then Kingston Process Metallurgy, Green Center Canada, a really strong chemistry and chemical engineering capabilities at Queen's, but also having a municipality in our city that truly wanted to invest into something innovative. Kingston was the first city to declare climate emergency a handful of years ago, and they're really taking action to actually try and solve these challenges. There's also other benefits of, which a lot of people don't know this statistic either, but Kingston has the highest per capita chemical process specialists in Canada. We are at a huge capita, but there's a ton of concentration where we can be pulling on and working with, 200 to 300 different specialists at a time, able to help with these projects. So really, Kingston has an ecosystem, it has the expertise, and it's been building what we kind of say that's a really fertile soil that's been developed and tilled over years and years and years and years, and sets up a really strong foundation to be able to help companies like this. And, we want to, and are putting Kingston as sort of the center of the chemistry, or chemtech, as we call it, ecosystem in Canada and really the world.
Wow. Thank you for all that background. I didn't know a lot of that. Yeah. And you guys opened up this week. How has that energy been?
Yeah. So we've been, it's been quite a long time coming. We've been working. Our team really started pushing through this in 2022 and went through, fundraising and construction and all these kind of things, and then had the facility open its doors at the end of 2024. And then now we've had our first client move in as of last month, which is what pushed us. Okay, it's time to have the official ribbon cutting and say, okay, here we are. Let's move forward. So the energy has been great. The local ecosystem is super exciting, and every person that we talk to is always willing to help in one way or another. But also, my business partner and I just came back from a 2-week trip to India, where a state government in India invited us to come to speak about the Reaction Hub model, with the wanting to collaborate specifically because this is something so novel unique in the ecosystem, that they said, okay, well, how do we do something like that? We want to work together and learn. So not only locally, but globally, Kingston is getting attention for doing something really unique. And I feel so lucky to get to work on that every day.
Awesome. And what kind of partners are already, involved in the hub?
Yeah. So we have an ecosystem of, as we said, kind of supporters. So when you think about the stakeholders that are required to bring a technology to market, there's working with academic institutions, but also with, business development. So this is your lawyers and your IP specialists and the technical experts, but also government and other kind of investors. But specifically, we split up our closest partners into something called alliances. So we either have technology development alliances, which is where we look at who are the experts that are really needed to make sure that the science and the engineering is right. So we work with KPM, with another organization called Lydium Engineering, of course have great relationships with Queen's and others, into the business development alliances, which is where we do all of our consulting services in alliance with Deloitte. So we're able to really access big amounts of data and expertise, and also a law firm called Dentons, and then into what we call technology adoption alliances. So we're able to develop technology, we're able to build the business around it, and then we help them actually get out into the world. And the one I wanted to really highlight is with Utilities Kingston, which also another story of what makes Kingston so awesome, is Utilities Kingston is the kind of organization umbrella that has everything from our city's wastewater, IoT, grid, and they have all these assets, and they're the ones that operate them. So they've built an alliance with us where we are to identify and kind of validate new technologies, and then connect them with their team and build out projects to be able to actually test and deploy these technologies on Utilities Kingston's infrastructure. So imagining that, within a year, we could have a new water technology testing on a wastewater treatment plant, which is really fascinating. And we're it's a really cool offering that we're able to bring to our companies. And then really quickly, what I wanted to highlight is the first two companies that are operating in the building. So one, our first client, Undo Carbon, they're a X Prize winning carbon removal company using enhanced rock weathering. So they're from the UK, moved to Kingston to set up a Canadian operations because they were have a partnership with a wollastonite mine north of the city. They have been doing amazing work in the carbon removal space, have a contract with Microsoft for their carbon credits. They're just doing great, a wonderful team. So they're in our facility to do their processing and all of their kind of quality analysis testing. And then the second is a company called Carbon Lock Technologies that's based out of the Western Canada that we're doing a pilot project to take a bio oil that they're able to create to turn it into a bitumen, so fossil fuel replacement in asphalt. So how do we create a more sustainable road infrastructure? So everything is, how do we make these changes to just, you know, get the things that we need to live our daily lives a little bit greener?
Well, a strong start is an understatement, but what are you hoping for the future of the hub? What do you see in the next few years?
Yeah, I think there is a lot of really exciting opportunities. Not only the different companies that we are seeing becoming interested and the different technology types like creating the new batteries and new recycling technologies for other materials. So the actual seeing the breadth of companies that can be supported. But I think what I'm the most excited about is being able to create a system that's a little bit friendlier and a little bit more efficient. So when I was a founder, it's really challenging. As we said, it can be lonely. There are so many, challenges or road bumps along the way. So now being able to create a system where you have infrastructure, you have the expertise when you need it, you have a ecosystem of organizations and former entrepreneurs that want to help. So really what I'm excited about for Reaction Hub is to have that place where people go, oh, I want to go there, one, because I get the best help, but also because I feel welcome and I feel supported. And being able to take that not just to support Canada, but to support the world, solve the many climate challenges that we have.
That was Morgan Lettinen, Executive Director of the Reaction Hub, Canada's newest center for green chemistry innovation right here in Kingston. With the city's investment and decades of chemical expertise behind it, the hub aims to turn Kingston into a national leader in sustainable tech and green industry. As Morgan mentioned, Kingston's innovation model is already gaining attention abroad, and the team hopes to make the Reaction Hub a blueprint for sustainable chemistry around the world. For CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative, this has been Christina Laurie.
Thank you, Chris. Next is Dinah Jansen with a story from the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for the Napanee Beaver, Sarah Williams, that provides an overview of the latest meeting of Greater Napanee's Town Council.
Thank you, Jesse. The Town of Greater Napanee Council was abuzz with discussion during their recent regular meeting on October 28th. Aside from an agenda full of noteworthy items, Council received deputations from Atura Power regarding Napanee BESS Phase 2 and representatives from the Napanee Raiders regarding revenue sharing. Council recently received a deputation from a company named Borelex looking for municipal support for their battery energy storage system project. Following that deputation, municipal support was granted for that particular BESS project. The latest request from Atura Power is one of several across the province in response to the Independent Electricity System Operator issuing a request for proposals in order to secure new electricity resources. The Napanee BESS Phase 2 would build upon Phase 1. The existing BESS was granted approval by the IESO in 2023. As per Brad Kite, the addition would add 300 megawatts of capacity with a duration of 8 hours. Phase 2, as with Phase 1, will be within the Lennox Generating Station site. Assuming municipal support is granted by the town, successful bids will be announced by June 16, 2026. Construction of the Napanee BESS Phase 2 will take approximately 2 years, with the facility intended to be operational by 2030. Council also received a deputation from Max Kaiser, executive board member of the Napanee Raiders. Kaiser presented council with a revenue-sharing opportunity from board advertisements at the Goodyear Rink in the Best in Bash Arena. Kaiser brought forward the idea of revenue sharing as a targeted strategy to offset the new cost of streaming games. With origins reaching back as far as the 1960s, the Raiders are Napanee's only junior hockey team. Their fan base spans generations, with Friday night games well attended by all ages. Recently, as per Kaiser, the Provincial Junior Hockey League mandated that all games need to be streamed live. Enabling this resulted in unforeseen costs for the team. The revenue sharing strategy proposed by Kaiser represents an investment in community without burdening the taxpayer. Unlike neighboring junior hockey team rinks, the ads at Goodyear Rink, as per Kaiser, are priced well below market value. With more revenue generated by these ads, Kaiser described a trickle-down effect that would benefit all users of the rink. Currently, the Raiders' revenue is limited to fees collected at the gates during games and from fundraising. After hearing the deputation from the Raiders, council directed staff to return with a report regarding the revenue-sharing request. Thank you to Sarah Williams for that story. Now over to Jesse Bell with a story from the LJI reporter for YGK News, Owen Fullerton, about the creation of a new animation studio in the city of Kingston.
Thank you, Dinah. As Kingston looks to continue to grow as a home for film and television production, the city will soon have a full-fledged animation and digital media studio that calls Kingston its permanent home. The new studio will be coming out of the gates with a fairly high-profile IP, with their first project already in development, an animated series alongside the renowned American author R.L. Stine, best known for the Goosebumps series of books. Donnie McIntyre, co-CEO and co-founder of Limestone Animations, said he thinks launching with such a recognizable piece of IP reinforces the studio's commitment to making itself and the city of Kingston a source of globally competitive animated content. He says that, while they are excited for the project to launch, they can't get into details about it other than saying that it will be based off the author's newest anthology series, Stine Tinglers. McIntyre said having a recognizable name associated with the launch was a goal for he and his co-founder Sean Connolly, and they're excited to be able to have that be a creator that they themselves are fans of, and serve a market that has somehow slipped through the cracks. The two founders, who have over 30 years of combined experience in the animation industry, were able to pitch to Stine and his team through a mutual connection, and said they were on board for the animated series right away. McIntyre said the studio will eventually be moving into 3D animation and more experimental styles of projects, partnering with consultants with expertise ranging from streaming to video game development, but are focusing on 2D animation to start as they get their feet underneath them and grow their team. Stine Tinglers, he says, provides a great opportunity to do that with a big brand. The two co-founders also saw the potential for growth and support in Kingston from a municipal level, with the city's creative strategy making supporting creative industries like film a priority. Limestone Animation stated that the global animation market is currently valued at $400 billion US, but is projected to more than double to $896 billion by 2034. As such, it's a market that the city of Kingston can see value in being a part of. As such, they're providing a fair amount of support to Limestone Animations in the way of rent-free space, a property tax exemption, and up to $250,000 to help cover startup costs and capital expenses previously approved by City Council. McIntyre credited the city for the huge amount of support they've given to make this a reality, and he says he thinks the community can also benefit from their presence and become a powerhouse in digital media and animation, with local programs and courses at schools like Queen's University and Loyalist already providing a bit of a pipeline. McIntyre noted that Canada's three largest cities are the most known for animation, as for many other industries, but smaller cities throughout Canada are starting to carve out a place, and Kingston could be one of them.
And thank you to Keith Dempsey for that story. Now over to the LJAI reporter for CJAI-FM Amherst Island Radio, Ted Evans, with a story about a name change for the W.J. Henderson Community Center.
Loyalist Township has announced the new name for the Aquatic Center at the W.J. Henderson Community Center. Through a gift agreement for naming rights with Bar Homes and a $250,000 donation from the company, the space will be named the Bar Homes Aquatic Center. Council approved the 10-year agreement at their latest meeting. CAO Rebecca Murphy spoke about the agreement with Bar Homes.
Bar Homes has agreed to sign on and be a major donor in the Tier 3 category to name the Aquatic Center at the facility at the WJ. This is very great. We're very gracious and very thankful to Bar for stepping up and being part of this vital community project. And we're excited to be naming it and recommending that it be named the Barr Holmes Aquatic Center.
The renewal of the entire center has been a large ongoing project for the township. The revitalization campaign was approved by council on December 10, 2024, with a goal of raising $2 million. The new space will feature an 8-lane, 25-meter pool, a new warm water leisure pool, updates to arena infrastructure, enhanced accessibility, updated change rooms, green energy upgrades, and a new Indigenous legacy space in partnership with the Downey Wenjack Fund. Residents can expect to see the new name used in township marketing materials. It will be displayed inside on the west wall of the space, as well as a location on the exterior of the building, to be agreed on at a later date. Barr Holmes will also be recognized on the donor wall, to be located in the atrium of the building. Barr Holmes has over 70 years of history in the construction industry within Kingston and the surrounding areas. According to the company, they build approximately 60 homes annually in Kingston and Loyalist Township. For Amherst Island Radio and the Local Journalism Initiative.
Thank you to Ted Evans for that story. Over to the Local Journalism Initiative reporter for CFWN, Dan Jones, with an update on the creation of a warming center in Northumberland County.
Northumberland County headquarters in Cobourg will be the home of a warming hub this winter. With the nightly temperatures falling and time being an issue, county mayors met virtually Tuesday to discuss a county staff report which recommended four locations, that being the county headquarters, the paramedic facility, and two rural options. County Warden and Brighton Mayor Brian Ostrander described the situation as a go or no-go option, previously stating that there was a 50% chance this warming room would not proceed. Discussion focused on the finer details of that proposal, with Cobourg Mayor Lucas Cleveland suggesting the warming room not be open 24 hours a day, wanting the county to follow a similar model to that of Durham's warming center, of just providing a warming space with no wraparound services, and to follow tight rules and regulations, including no drug use and violence.
This warming hub should be run by the county, by county staff, and that this warming hub should not operate 24 hours a day, but should be operated from 8 p.m. till 8 a.m. and starting November 15th to March 31st. I agree, we need a warming room. We need a place for people to stay warm and not die, as some of our individuals said.
County staff have identified using the council chambers to serve as the warming room, with users having access to washroom facilities. Cleveland expressed that county staff operate the facility, while county acting CAO Glenn Dees said a third party for staffing and security may be used with oversight from the county. Cobourg Council would need to pass an exemption to their emergency care establishment bylaw to issue a third permit to the county. Colborne Mayor Mandy Martin had reservations that Cobourg would dictate to the county how to run the warming room. However, Cobourg Council has final approval over whether the county is granted a bylaw exemption. Cleveland will present a motion before his council to consider the existing Golden Plow long-term care facility as the future site of the warming room. Senior residents there are soon set to move to a new long-term care facility. Yet Dee said there are challenges with the province in using both facilities. The examination of the Golden Plow will be looked at later, possibly for the winter of 2026. County staff will prepare a report quickly on the logistics of opening the warming room for as soon as possible. It will cost approximately $218,000 to operate the 7-day-a-week facility. Reporting for CFWN and the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Dan Jones.
And thank you to Dan Jones for that story. Next up is Jesse Bell with CFRC's Environment Canada weather forecast for the Kingston region.
This is Jesse Bell with your Environment Canada weather report for the Kingston region. Thursday, November 6th, 7 degrees, partly sunny, 25% chance of rain, overnight low of 1 degree, so right around the freezing point. Friday, November 7th, 8 degrees with a 60% chance of precipitation in the afternoon, dropping down just a single degree to 7 overnight. Saturday, November 8th, 9 degrees with intervals of cloud and sunshine throughout the day, dropping down to 5 overnight. Sunday, November 9th, daytime high of 9, 75% chance of rain in the morning, otherwise just kind of cloudy and gray. And moving into the start of next week, Monday, November 10th, daytime high of just 5, dropping down to 0 overnight.
And that's a wrap for this week's edition of The Corridor, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative and the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Don't forget to visit CFRC.ca for the latest in local and regional news headlines, concert and events listings, and more. You can also follow CFRC on Facebook and Instagram at CFRC Music and on Twitter X at CFRC. You can support CFRC and its independent news programming by donating via CFRC.ca. We'll be back next week with more in local and regional news. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, situated on the traditional territories of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of Smith Engineering.